I would tell everyone about the first time we met. Oh my goodness. Most uncomfortable, you know. Okay, hi everyone. Thank you, Hannah, so much. And it's so nice seeing so many of you, many faces I don't recognize, many faces that I've had the schuss of meeting, whether it was at Shiurim or my Shabbos here, or the panel we had a couple months back, and look forward to having the opportunity of connecting, learning together, and learning from you in the future. My wife is always critical of me or upset at me when I begin Shiurim or speeches with an apology. That hasn't stopped me from continuing to do it. Certain habits are hard to break. Usually I try to give out source sheets of sorts. This is a very, very busy couple of days, so I apologize. That's not the case, but if anybody hears anything that they want some follow-up about or a marmokum on this topic or other topics, certainly feel free to always reach out to me. I'm happy to give out my email if I can ever be of any assistance in the future. Sometimes you think about the scene at the end of a person's life. I'm sure many of you have had grandparents who unfortunately have gone on to the Olam HaEmes. And sometimes you think about the scene in their room, around their beds, on the last moments of a person's life. And I'm sure that many of you have thought about, whether it's from personal experience or whether just sort of viewing this or observing this from a distance, that the way that a person leaves this world is often a reflection of the way they lived in this world. So if you have a person who is very mitkasher, very connected to their children and grandchildren, maybe great-grandchildren, and the person was a real sort of paternal or maternal, a patriarch, matriarch, and sometimes you go into their room in the last days of their life, and assuming that this is even feasible or possible, just the sense of a family by the bed and a family by the room and circling around the bed of the individual. What like a beautiful and meaningful scene that is, because there's a recognition of everything that's happened before that period of time in a person's life. And unfortunately, many, many times in my experience in the Rabbanus, you've seen just the opposite also. This guy doesn't speak to his son, and the person is not married, and they're at ends or at odds with their siblings, and this grandchild doesn't like the grandfather, and people sometimes, Nebuch, unfortunately, which is really the greatest klala, leave this world by themselves. And it's also a reflection of a person's life. And I never saw this brought down or mentioned in any of the Svarim, but I couldn't help but think what an incredible scene the last days of Yaakov Avinu's life is. Because if I were to ask you, what was the image or the imagery of Yaakov's last major act in his life? Obviously, he was giving his children the brachos. But if I were to ask you, you can even demonstrate, what was the last thing we remember Yaakov for? So I would say, of course, the switching of the hands on the heads of Ephraim and Manasseh, giving the bracha of the Bechor to Ephraim and the bracha to the non-Bechor to Manasseh. And that was essentially Yaakov's last act, last meaningful act in this world. Now, why does that stand out in my head? Besides it being meaningful in and of itself, but in a way, it brings Yaakov's life full circle. And if you've ever seen this discussed in the Svarim, please, please let me know that the first thing or the first way in which we're introduced to Yaakov, not the way that he's described by the Torah, but the first meaningful act that Yaakov did in his life was essentially to have the bracha switched between him and Esav. That instead of Esav getting the Birchas HaBechor and then Yaakov getting the other bracha, things were switched, and now Yaakov got the bracha of the Bechor, and Esav didn't. And it's amazing when we think about that sort of sigul, or that circle, in a way, of the first act, meaningful act, and the last meaningful act. And it makes a person think a little bit about the life of Yaakov Avinu, and almost what's being highlighted. Because Yaakov Avinu is a person that it very much grew in front of our eyes. Yaakov Avinu was the person who had to go through a process of metamorphosis and transformation to deal with the galut of the exile, with people like Lavan, people like Esav. Yaakov had to transform himself from the Ishtam Yoshev Ohel, sort of like that simple image of like the Edel Kanedel, to now the person who has to deal with everything in his life and issues with his children and other adversaries. And what that imagery also does, the imagery of the first incident of Yaakov's life being the essentially the crossing, the switching of the hands as far as the brachos, and the last act of Yaakov's life also being that, it makes the person almost think about the conundrum that I imagine that many of you have thought about before. Namely, the pasuk says, "Titen emos liYaakov." Where's the pasuk found? Normally, if there's a pasuk you have it, or you don't exactly know where it is, so the safe bet is usually to say, where is it from? This is what I always do when I don't know. You want to seem as though you do know. So I say, yeah, Tehillah, Mishlei. So this actually pasuk in Micha, Titen emos liYaakov chesed l'Avraham, which is interesting that the emes liYaakov comes before the chesed l'Avraham. And there's a lot of discussion in Rav Kook about this topic. He would say, Titen chesed l'Avraham v'emes liYaakov. But either way, there's only one way that Yaakov is identified in the Torah, or in Tanakh, either as the Ishtam, or as the Ishemes, Titen emes liYaakov. But yet, to some degree, if you look at every single personality in the entire Tanakh, and you ask yourself, just based on the way that we define and the way that we construe MS, who is the person who, in a way, we're most challenged by? And you'd probably say Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu, in the quote-unquote, the deception to his father about the brachos. Where else do we have other instances where explicitly Yaakov is acting in a way where it's identified as being deceiving or deceptive? So we're told that Yaakov leaving in Parshas Vayetze from the house of Lavan, that he was called a Gonev Das because he sort of left in the middle of the night. And he did so with the big, according to the Svarno and many others, so many people and all the cattle and all the animals, so that nobody would really think that he was leaving because he made such a big show about it. This way he left the impression that he wasn't leaving, right? If you want to leave, you want to be deceiving, you sort of sneak out in the middle of the night. I grew up in Baltimore. There was a team, the Baltimore Colts, many, many, many years before your guy's birth. They left Baltimore, ended up going to Cleveland. 3 o'clock in the morning, they packed their stuff into a bunch of trucks. Nobody was supposed to know about it, and they snuck out of town. And Yaakov and Parshas Vayetze did just the opposite when he left the home of Lavan, according to the Rishonim, so that he could leave the impression that he wasn't leaving, but he really was leaving. Now that's the image of MS, deceiving your father-in-law, whoever Lavan was, and doing so in a way to try to be optimally, to maximize deception. So how do we conceptualize that idea? That was Yaakov. Anybody else know another place that's less explicit, but also clearly deception, according to the Rishonim and according to the Midrashim? So when Yaakov meets with Esav in the beginning of Parshas Vayishlach, so he tells Esav, I will see you in Seir, in Har Seir. And we showed him to say that Yaakov had no intention of going to Har Seir. He was just trying perhaps to either deceive or to deflect or to not run into an issue with Esav. So he said something that was not correct. And in all of these cases, and in all of these situations, the Midrashim and the Rishonim, they all sort of get together and they say, well, this really wasn't a deception, and he was just doing what his mother wanted him to do, or he was just protecting his life, or he was dealing with Lavan, so of course when you deal with Lavan, you have to be deceiving. And all that may be true, but is that then the person that we say is the Emes liYaakov, the person that we identify with the Midah of truth? Right? Everyone hear that? Everyone hear that point? Again, this is not a new issue. This has been discussed for hundreds, if not a thousand years. So in order to think about that question, I want to speak a little bit in the few minutes that we have, and I just want to commend everybody. I've given, over the course of my time in YU, this year, dozens of times. this club hour shiur, and to have however many people are here now, 50 people during club hour, taking time to learn, when people are beyond stressed out. I asked Hannah how she's doing. She said, "I'm stressed out." Now, I don't need to embarrass Hannah, but I'm sure she speaks for everybody here. Okay, and the fact that you come and to learn and get together in this way, what a beautiful statement of you guys. So let's speak a little bit about the Midah of Emes. Because the Midah of Emes is something that is very confusing, how to be Mishaer, and how to even define the word Emes. If I tell you anger, right, every single person here, they know what anger looks like. If you're a father or somebody, I don't know, my father's always been blamed for this, their face is getting red, there's steam coming out of ears, there's a jaw that's clenching, a voice is being raised, you can say, oh yeah, that's kas, that's anger. Tzedakah, perhaps gaiva, they're mitos that are identifiable. But if I ask you to describe and to define and to identify an ish emes or an isha emes, you might struggle to exactly define what those words are or what the midah of emes is. And it's not simple. Now, on the most simple levels, emes is the opposite of what word, right? This is very obvious. Right? Emes is the opposite of sheker, right? Sheker means lying. Emes means telling the truth. And I'm sure every single person here can make a catalog of sources or a catalog of ideas from the Gemara, from the Rishonim, teaching us about the nefarious, horrible, destructive nature of lying, and then the value of emes. And then what a strong concept that is, so to speak. For instance, something very surprising, the Gemara in Sanhedrin says, in Daf Tzadiches, that anybody who's matlif es lishoneu, anybody who switches around the words, namely, he's not wholly telling the truth, if I know what the Gemara says, heel hu oved avodah zarah. That person is as though he's worshipped idols. If I ask you what you did last night when you made for dinner, and I don't know why you lied about this, you had 5 rolls of sushi, but you'd say I had, I don't know, a kale salad, right? So with that, okay, fine. So that's what Gemara says, is people who obeyed avodah zarah. It's as though you are an idol worshiper. And it seems to be, this is discussed by many of the Baalim Moser, it seems to be pretty obvious why that should be the case. Because when you tell the truth, you are essentially doing, I guess, the Ratzon Hashem, for lack of a better word. Why is a person lying? A person is lying because there's some element of sort of self-interest. I don't want to tell you something. I want to hide something. I want to obfuscate something. And in a way, sort of, it's almost like a worship of self. It's like you're totally mishubad. You're totally connected to your own needs and wants. And that often is in contrast to simply the right thing to do. The beautiful Or Chaim, at the very beginning of Sefer Shmos, it's in the middle of a big Or Chaim, but the Or Chaim HaKadosh pointed out that even in the midst of slavery in Mizraim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to make sure that nothing that Bnei Yisrael said would be untrue. They wouldn't be lying about their intentions. They wouldn't be lying about taking money. They wouldn't try to be deceiving. Even in the midst of slavery, the Or Chaim said, at the beginning of the birth of the nation, the beginning of the creation of the nation, every single thing, there was a chinuch of always telling the truth under all circumstances. And many of the Baalei Musar, what they recommend doing, and I also in my they do this, and I highly recommend it also, is to have almost like a daily chesed before you go to bed. The person has to journal with an actual, I know such a thing exists, a real journal and a real pen and paper. You know, that may be too much. I imagine everyone here has a phone. They can take a daily log and say, you know what, I told somebody such a thing. It really wasn't totally accurate. And for whatever reason, I felt the need of being mishanah b'diburo a little bit. There's an amazing idea brought down by Maharshal. Maharshal is one of the great Acharonim, and he discusses the
famous Gemara in Bava Kamma and Daf Lamed Ches and Aleph. And the Gemara says that when representatives of Rome came to the giants of the Talmud, and they learned the entire Talmud from beginning to end, and they said, we like everything in this Talmud. We like everything in the Torah. Which is very, very impressive, by the way. Right? The Roman representatives came. They learned Kol Tarkula. Right? It's a lot of Musar for me, at least. And they said, we agree with everything here, but there's one thing that we find offensive that you've taught us. Something that you, the Chachamim, you've taught us, we don't like. Okay? Everybody know what that is? So the Pasuk says, in Shvatim, Shur Re'ehu, if my ox, if my dog attacked your dog or your cat, okay, and you are a Jew, I have to pay for the value of the animal that was damaged, that was injured, that was killed. But that's Shur Re'ehu, below Shur Shel Akum. But if my dog goes to my neighbor, if I can even find a non-Jewish neighbor anywhere in Muncie, and he goes to that animal and he destroys an animal, so I don't have to pay. Maybe he's Rabbanan, maybe it's the right thing to do. Shur Re'ehu, below Shur Shel Akum. And these representatives of Rome, they came and they said, well, we find it somewhat offensive, and we can understand why. Here's no way that would be offensive to the representatives of Rome. And the Maharshal asked the following question. The Maharshal said, so why even tell the truth about the Torah? This wasn't a drasha. You could just say Shur Shur Re'ehu. Why did the Chachamim feel the need to darshan that pasuk and say Shur Re'ehu v'lo Shur Shel Akum? Protect yourself, don't fall under the wrath of Rome, and just leave that part out, even just like omit that part. And the Maharshal said that to do so, to have such little integrity, to misrepresent the Torah, he said that type of sort of bizayo, that type of zeal of Torah, it's like a disgrace of Torah. He said to go ahead and to try to teach the Torah, but to do so without integrity. That's like the highest level of zeal. And even if you become endangered afterwards, and even if people give you a hard time afterwards, you cannot live your life with a lack of integrity. I was thinking of two stories that I heard on the same day about this topic. And I'm sure that all of you in your life, as I can in my life, sort of can always think about sometimes like the looseness of language. And why would we sort of use language that's loose? I don't mean crude. Either because we want to come off a certain way to other people. I want to tell a story. The story's like over here, but if I tell the story like this, wow, then that's going to be a great story. Or I want people to think more highly of me. Or maybe I'm afraid of consequences. You don't want your wife to find out X, Y, and Z. Just for those of you thinking about your Mirz Hashem marriage down the road, there's a chazaka as old as time. The husband is always afraid of the wife's reactions, and never vice versa in the history of mankind. There's always the husband is coming home, oh, my wife's going to be upset about X, Y, and Z. I have to sort of maybe make up some type of story, because people are just loose with their words for a whole host of reasons. And then nasa keheter, nasa herkel, you just get into sort of a habit of not being midutak and midayek in the way that you speak. A life of integrity, a life of emes, of not being machlif yiburaydu, of saying every word kiragil, the way that should be said, requires tremendous, tremendous work. I'll tell you two stories that happened to me, I believe, around the same week. I have a brother who lives in Ramat Beit Shemesh, a very, very special person. He has a son who's learning in the Mir and the Shir of Asher Areli, married with a child. Before he was married, he wanted to get a patur from going to the army. It's not that my brother's family is against the army, but just for his son, he wants to be learning in the Mir. But in order to sort of get out of the army, you have to take certain types of tests. I'm not sure if this is true for everybody. For some reason, he needed to take tests. He took tests in mathematics. My nephew Yosef is excellent in mathematics, and he kept on scoring very, very high on the tests. And my brother and his wife were like the most yosher people. They thought to themselves, well, he really wants to be learning, and if he keeps on doing so well on the Army's tests, there's a chance that he might get drafted. Is it okay, perhaps, on a test like that, not try your hardest? come in and just, you know, forget certain answers or not fill in certain answers. So they call their Rav, Rav Milinowitz of the Shalom, Ramate Chembesh, and Sul Beis Vila, and he asked him this question, which is not typical of my brother, because my brother just always realizes what the right thing to do is. And Rav Milinowitz said, Dr. Blass, he said, let me tell you something. Integrity and honesty is a core value of the Torah. He says, you never compromise a core value for practical reality. So if I lie, if I omit, if I don't try my hardest, right, I'm not living a life of integrity. There's a practical value of not going to the army. He says, you never compromise integrity just for a practical matter. And those words stuck in my head. That week I get a call from a woman in our neighborhood, and the woman said, me and my husband are having disagreements, and of course we know how this one's going to end. She said, I have a neighbor who's not Jewish, and there's like a wooden fence in between our properties, and the fence is falling apart anyway. One of these like old-time like wooden fences, and one of my kids sat on the fence, and the fence sort of collapsed. The neighbor wasn't there, they didn't see it, she was out of town, it was late at night, whatever the circumstances were. My husband said, we shouldn't say anything. Because already there's so much, it's like in the middle of COVID, so much anti-Semitism, what are they going to think about us? Maybe we should like not say anything, the fence needs fixing anyway. And she called me up and she said, hey, Rabbi, I'm not so comfortable with that, like what do you think, right? And of course, you can imagine what I would think about such an approach, like not to say something to this neighbor, but maybe. And I told her exactly that. Integrity needs to be applied every single situation. Truthfulness. And let the chips fall where they may. You're in trouble, they're upset. But your avoda is to live a life of integrity. Now, if that's the case, if that's the definition of MS, is it difficult to then go ahead and say that the defining mida of Yaakov's life was a life of MS? Always telling the truth. The answer would seem to be, well, maybe that's a little problematic. Or maybe it wasn't always a life of truth. So how do we correlate those two ideas? Now, is there another idea of MS? What else do we mean when we say that a person is a person of MS? So who, and many of you guys, or all of you, are super well educated, who is the person in the last couple hundred years in Jewish thought and in Hasidus that we identify with this mida of emes, of, for lack of a better word, truthfulness? Hey, Persky? So, yes, but even more famous than Rabbi Persky. I don't want to cause any sister, you know, twins or anything else, but okay, so the Kutzer Rebbe, both of you were right, by the way. So you're also right. Okay. You have to be right, by the way, but it is an old, for those of you want to go with the Chinuch, it's like the old trick of telling somebody they're right when they say something absolutely crazy. You know what I mean? I always ask my first year teacher, I asked, hey, remember where the rabbi's from? And the girl's like, Brooklyn? I'm like, I'm so close, and I'm so right, but it's a little bit like, you know. No smile, nothing. I'm like, no, that's really close, but Rabbi, you know, lived a little bit before the United States actually settled them. Anyway, so, okay. So where was I? Anyway, so the Kutzker Rebbe, of course, was the great Rabbi Morgenstern. He was like the great Hasidic, non-Hasidic Rebbe. If you know anything about the Kutzker Rebbe, you know what I mean by that. You know, he didn't have like lots of Hasidim. He wasn't like a warm and fuzzy spiritual, like, when he was, and this really came from his grandfather's Rebbe, his grandfather, or from the whole school, which came from Peshitz. And there's a beautiful book written called The Quest for Authenticity, right? And authenticity is MS. It means everything that I do because it is real, right? I don't do anything because I want to show, or I want you to think X, or maybe you might think Y, or you won't think Z, or I give up this impression, or there's some kavod involved, or there's some gaiva involved. Everything was just working on yourself for a lifetime, so that everything you're doing has like a mida of absolute gashmus. I'm doing something only for the thing itself. the Sfas Emes, who also came from that same school, Shiz, on the pasuk of Shoftim Meshotrim Tielokav Sharecha, in very typical Sfas Emes fashion, he says, what Shoftim Meshotrim Tielokav Sharecha? You should appoint for yourself internally a shofet, somebody to judge your own behavior, i.e. yourself, that you're a shofet for yourself. You're a shoter, which means you have to sort of get yourself, group yourself into shape. Tikei lecha, you should place for yourself the sharefa. Namely, you're always evaluating and judging yourself as far as you being a person of emes. As far as you being a person who is just doing something for the right reason. It's a beautiful idea brought down by Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, one of the greats of all time, the founder of the Muslim movement, which is all about introspection. And he speaks about the concept of das atzmucha, to always know oneself, always be thinking of oneself. There's been a beautiful sermon written by Rabbi Yitzchak Schwartz on that topic. And he said, das atzmucha, he said that the Shvatim probably thought that when they sold Yosef into slavery, they were doing the right thing. They didn't do so vindictively. They didn't think to themselves, oh yeah, I'm taking our younger brother and we're going to humiliate him. They thought this was necessary for whatever the Peshvodas were. But because there wasn't enough of a quality of da'as atzmcha, to know oneself, they didn't realize that wrapped up in that action and that mechira was kinah and gaiva and anger and being vindictive. They didn't realize themselves, imagine this time of the shift they caught, of their own motivations. That's a das atzmcha, shoftim shoftrim titen lecha. There's so much about this topic. It's a beautiful Beis HaLevi. I'll definitely look at this marmakom for down the road. At the beginning of last week's parasha, parashas Vayigash, and the Yosef Ha'oda Vichai, Yosef telling his brothers, how do you sit there in front of me, telling me about your father, and concern for your father? I mean, Yosef Ha'oda Vichai, do you even have a self-awareness about your own hypocriticalness, which is sort of the language of Beis HaLevi used, your own mistakes in your life? He says, that is, and the Medrash tells us, right, when a person realizes of all the duplicity in their life, I want people to think X, but I'm really Y behind that. I want people to think I'm a Porish, and I'm a Tzaddik, and I'm a this, but behind closed doors, oh boy, you should hear the way that person X speaks to their children and speaks to their wife. The duplicity, often the contradictions. And MS is a resolution of that. I want to tell you an amazing story about Tots. I'll tell you two stories. One is a story about simplicity. Anybody here, probably no one here is from the Lower East Side, correct? There used to be a time you would ask that question stern, like every person is either from the Lower East Side, or but probably a lot of your grandparents were from the Lower East Side. And Rav David Feinstein was just Nifter last year. And the greatness of Rav David Feinstein was that he was just absolute simple. There was no duplicity. There was no duality. There was nothing saying one thing and doing another thing. I don't know why I always love this story, but there was a Rosh Yeshiva who came in from one of the five boroughs. He had a meeting in the Lower East Side. He was hungry. And Rosh Yeshiva is not going to walk into a pizza store with a frock and a hamburger and sitting down eating a piece of pizza. He said, I'll sit here in the car and I'll eat a piece of pizza. His brother was a shamish. He sent his brother into the pizza store. His brother comes out with a free piece of pizza. And his brother's like, oh, and by the way, Rudolph Feinstein sends his regards. Because Rudolph would just sit in the pizza store every single day and talk to people over his side. And he wasn't worried about what I should be doing and how I should be this and how I'm going to be perceived. He was just simple, without any contradictions or duplicity. And how to sort of live that life. I'm doing something because it's the right thing and not because of other people. That's the life of Emes. So the Kutzker Rebbe had a Talmud, and listen to the story. If you want to find the story, it's found in a book written by the Kutzker Rebbe called Leaping Souls. It's a bright blue sefer. I love it. It's a great book. It's written in English. And there was a Talmud of the Kutzker Rebbe. And the Talmud of the Kutzker Rebbe was on his deathbed. And he had his Talmidim around, sort of four or five Talmidim standing there. And the Talmidim asked the Talmid of the Kotzker Rebbe, said, Rebbe, so what do you see at this moment? Your neshama is about to leave the world. Do you see malachim hovering above you? Do you hear like the pearly gates opening? Like, what do you hear at that moment? What do you see at that moment? So what do you think the Talmud of the Kotzker Rebbe responded back to his students? He said, are you joking? He said, even now I have the Satan whispering in my ear, telling me, Shmulek, whatever his name was, he said, say Kriyat Shema and elongate the Dalid at the end of the word Echad, so that everyone will say that Shmulek died with the word Echad on his lips. He said, on his deathbed, he said, that's what he was thinking about. Of what people would think about him, and how people were going to speak about it. And Kutz was about this emes, looking into ourselves with that absolute clarity. Now, if either one of these things are true, if what emes is either always telling the truth and not lying, or emes is looking internally within ourselves, introspection, Kutz, looking at ourselves, working on ourselves, what does it then mean when we say, as the Gemara says in the Shabbos, the Chos Moshe HaKadosh Baruch Hu Emes? The seal of God is truthfulness, is Emes. What does it mean when the Pasuk says in Tehillim, Emes Me Eretz Titzmach? Truth will sprout from the ground. What does the Pasuk in Yirmiyahu say, that God is identified with the need of Emes? What does that mean? What does it mean that Chosmo, the seal of God, is Emes? And is God only tells the truth? That's what that means? Does it mean that in the Kutzker sort of world, that God is a God of Emes who looks at himself, introspection? Did you hear the question? What does it mean that Chosmo shall Kodesh Baruch Hu Emes? What does Emes mean in that way? Everyone following this? So I think, again, there's a lot on all of these topics. I think that the entire conception of Kutz is, as we spoke about a second ago, is that everything in a person's life is consistent. Everything is shalom. If I come to the Beis Medrash in YU, where I'm Mashgiach from Chani, and I speak about midos and anger and generosity and chesed, and then I go home and I yell at my kids, which I know they happen every once in a while, I'm not a person of emes. I'm not a person who is shalem. I'm not a whole person. And the idea of Kutz is to look at ourselves and say, well, isn't that a contradiction? Isn't it a contradiction to daven in Shmoneh Esrei, that's like a tenth of Shmoneh Esrei, and then maybe the next day not go to meeting at all? Isn't it a contradiction to speak about values and then to mistreat our parents in some way, or our spouses, or our siblings? Isn't it a contradiction to speak about mindfulness and godliness and then to eat food all day and have no consciousness of what put in our mouth? MS is the recognition of the necessity of shlemus. It's not just about telling the truth or not telling the truth. It's about, is there like a shlemus in a person's life? There's an amazing sheet of the Urayim, okay? And the Urayim is one of the great late Shogun. And as you well know, the Gemara says, in Sechas Yevamos, that a person is never supposed to lie, except for when? When is a person allowed to lie? Or Mishana? Well, for Shalom. You know, Shalom Bayis, for purposes of Shalom, right? And the examples given at Gemara are really not about Shalom Bayis, it's about Shalom, including this Yitarsha, that the brothers telling Yosef that our father wants you to forgive us. That's not Shalom Bayis, that's like Shalom in the world, or Shalom between brothers. And listen to what the Urayim said. The Urayim said that if I lie, or I mishaneh the Bnei HaShalom. Somebody comes to me and they say, you know, Rabbi Glass, whatever. You know, how do I look? Who knows? Whatever the question might be, and I tell them, oh, you're doing amazing for that purpose, that's not even called check-in, right? Even though it's an untrue statement, that is a statement, says the Uraian, of emes, of truthfulness. Why is that a statement of truthfulness? Because it's like a statement of like shlemus in a person's life. To be an ish emes is to be a person that I start with a goal, I start with an ideology, I start with what I want to do in my life. So what if I say that what I want to do in my life is to serve a Kodesh Baruch Hu and to be a Baal Chesed and to be a good person. Let's say those were my goals. That is like the guiding principles of my life. Then the question would be, in ish emes, is everything synthesized into that? Is everything a piece of that? Is everything consistent? Is everything shalem? Is everything part of the guiding purposes and principles in my life? And if over here, my guiding principle is X, right? My guiding principle is serve a Kodesh Baruch Hu and to be a Baal Bitachon, but then I kill the guy I'm sitting next to get the job during the summer, so then there's just a fundamental idea of a lack of MS or like a sheker in my life. When we say the chosmol shal Kodesh Baruch Hu MS, it's because the Kodesh Baruch Hu is by definition shalik, whole. Every sort of piece of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, every one of the yud gimel midos are rachamim. Rachamim and din and anger and charon af and ahava, all of it is seamless. All of it is part of like a theme within a Kodesh Baruch Hu. That's chosmah of Kodesh Baruch Hu emes. There's a oneness, there's a wholeness. Everything is whole, everything is integrated. When we say titein emes liyakov, the emes Yaakov was the ish emes, it wasn't because he never lied or was never deceived. But everything that Yaakov did, whether it was taking the bracha from Esav, or making sure that he moved away from Laban, or his interactions with Esav, or anything else, it was all part of the guiding principles of Yaakov's life, of the one who's going to establish the shifting kah. It was a life of shleimus, of emes, in every single piece. There's so much to speak on this topic, but I was just reading recently, Shalom is what you're referring to, but the book about Rav Moshe Korsky, remember to read this, A Malach in Our Midst, I believe. It's a great book to feel really bad about yourself. You want to, like, I sit there and I'm like, maybe I shouldn't sleep, and maybe I should just learn all day, and maybe I should this, and maybe I should be total tzaddik. It's like, it's overwhelming. So I'll tell you a story about that I love. There was a chassan who was getting married, who I guess was in Paris Moshe for many, many years. The chassan was a huge talmid chacham. His future father-in-law at the chassan's tish expected him to say a whole shtikel Torah at the chassan's tish, which I'm sure that Josh did at his, right? And he kept on getting up to speak. He looked like he was going to pass out, and the guy started singing. And then he would like sort of breathe. He would get up to speak again. The guy started speaking again. 20 minutes this went on, he couldn't get a word out of his mouth. Finally, he just gave up. The father-in-law gave up. They got married. Shalom Yisrael. And afterwards, somebody came to the chassan and said, wasn't it amazing what Rabbi Twersky did? That Rabbi Twersky, if you never heard of Twersky, was a very shy person. He was very unassuming. He never liked the limelight. He wasn't loud. And so what did he do? He said, he kept on starting the singing at the chassan's tish so that you wouldn't speak. Because Rabbi Twersky took one look at him, and he realized that the guy was going to just whatever. He took a look at his eyes, and he said, even though it's the most uncomfortable thing for me to start singing, I'm going to keep on singing to avoid sort of the tsar balikayim of this Talmud. Now that's what it means to be an ish emes. It means that there's a guiding principle in my life. And every single thing that happens in my life somehow falls under that guiding principle. If there's a guiding principle of goodness and decency, God consciousness, then to be an ish emes, an isha emes, titen emes Yaakov, chos moshe kodesh baruch hu emes, it's a constantly, not in a way that is neurotic or anxious or oppressive, but to constantly be reflective about our lives, our everything that we're doing and how we're speaking and how we're acting, is it under the guiding principles of what I want my life. By doing so, Mir Hashem, you can walk in the ways of Kodesh Baruch Hu, whose seal is MS, whose identity is MS. We can walk in the ways of Yaakov Avinu, even through difficult times, to always make sure of, A, a life of absolute integrity, a life of self-awareness, and a life to make sure that fundamentally we are ishim, anashim, nashim, that are shleimim, that are mitim, and by doing that, Mirza Shev, we can look forward to a time of ultimate MS, and neither of you may do something else.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's fine.